Welcome to Talking Hoosier Baseball. We are recording this on Wednesday, April 9th, 2025. I am Carl James, joined by Zach Horwitz, Chris Feeney, and Cassidy Palmer. After another disappointing collapse, this time defensively against Louisville last Tuesday, the Hoosiers faced another condensed series, playing four games in 3 days from Sunday to Tuesday. The results were impressive, to say the least. Indiana was the first team this season to hang a loss on Michigan State ace lefty Joseph Girouet on Sunday. Then a 14-inning act of total domination on Monday got the Hoosiers the series sweep over Sparty and a pair of run rule victories. Indiana then deployed a collection of southpaws to beat Ball State last night, while Tyler Cerny broke the program record for being hit by pitches. In the midseason recognition front, Devin Taylor and Corbin Dickerson both made the Golden Spikes watch list. Dickerson also added recognition by D1Baseball.com as the national breakout prospect for the season, and their B1G Baseball and Beyond Midseason Newcomer of the Year for that podcast. That same podcast gave honorable mentions to Taylor and Dickerson for Potential Player of the Year, Cole Gilley for Newcomer, Jake Hanley and Cooper Malamazian made the freshman honor roll in that group. We also got some program news yesterday, which Coach Mercer confirmed that bidding is out for new turf for Bart Kaufman Field, hopefully to be installed this coming summer. Well, since Chris was in New York this past weekend, as you can see, he's still decked out in his Mets gear, Zach will be the one to hand out our red belts for the week. Zach, what do you got?
Yeah, thank you, Carl. Chris, I don't know how you do this every week. It's hard to really single a player out, but I did the best I could, and we'll start with the Joey Donato Pitching Award. So on a usual week, I would give it to a guy who steps up when the team needed it most, and that was Tuesday's 4 1/3 shutout innings from Darren Swanson. But it was not a normal week. Indiana played four games in 3 days with a big midweek matchup on the previous Tuesday against Louisville. So that being said, I'm giving it to a guy who is the heart and soul of the pitching staff. He made his mark, making an appearance in three of the past five games, and that is Ryan Kraft. He started games. He's come out of relief. He's closed games, combining for five innings pitched, three hits allowed, only one earned run in that stretch, and they call him the sheriff for a reason, and he runs this town. So Joey Donato Pitching Award goes to Ryan Kraft. Next up, I'll go to the Alex Dickerson Offensive Red Belt, and I can't believe I'm doing this, but this week's Offensive Red Belt is somehow not going to Corbin Dickerson. Despite all the RBI production and the home runs he's hit, this week's belt goes to the guy who allows him to do that, and that is Devin Taylor. Jeff Mercer thinks he's been hitting the ball as well as he ever has, and we all know he's one away from the program record in home runs, but his approach is just simply so incredible right now. He's been patient at the plate, and that's especially with him taking over the leadoff spot in the batting order with Andrew Wiggins sidelined with an injury as of now. So in the Michigan State series and the Ball State midweek on Tuesday, Devin Taylor is 8-for-14, three of those being multi-hit games, tacking on five RBIs. He scored seven times thanks to both his bat and drawing four walks as well. So really, Taylor's a threat whether you pitch to him or not. And hopefully we get the record-breaking home run pretty soon, but he's got this week's Offensive Red Belt. And last but not least, the Defensive Red Belt, the Tony Butler Award. So now I'll give him his flowers. It goes to Corbin Dickerson. He gets the red belt this week. He's manned the center field position all year long. He's gotten great jumps on the ball, and he even talked about that after a game, and most notably the diving grab in the series finale against Michigan State. So Tony Butler Defensive Red Belt goes to Corbin Dickerson. So to wrap it up, it's Ryan Kraft and then the outfield duo of Devin Taylor and Corbin Dickerson who earned this week's red belts.
See, wasn't that odd, Zach? You nailed all three. Come on. I really love the Kraft pick, bro. That was really, you know, for him to just, you know, shut it down at the end there just the other night. And it's so good having him back, isn't it? You know, I mean, he was just somebody else, I guess, just because he was hurt. And he just shows you what just feeling confident and going back to being the person you are is. And to see Kraft, you know, well earned. Good work, Jack.
Yeah. Thank you. And now that we've gotten through about the midpoint of the season, with a quick update on the pitching side, Gilly still leads the way with three red belts, and Kraft now has two. And then we've got Seabold, Grable, and Burr each with one. So it's still really anybody's game. In all of these, it's very much anybody's game. On the offensive side, Devin Taylor has two. Oliver has one. Dickerson has one. Cerny has one. Denny has one. Hanley has one. Malamazian has one. So that one could not really get any tighter. On the defensive side, we've got Malamazian with two, and then Moore with one, Taylor with one, Wiggins with one, Dickerson with one, Cerny
Damn.
with one, Skyler with one.
I spread them out, huh?
You have
Holy
very much
cow.
spread them out this year.
Now
So
I got Alonzo. Pete Alonzo gets one. Okay. We're going to give him one. So add him to the one. Absolutely, Pete Alonzo for the home run opening day. Trying to think, pitching, who would it have been? I didn't even think about it, but Alonzo gets one. So add him to the one list.
Okay. And Coach Mercer does not get one for not
No.
making the play at third.
I heard he blew one, huh?
He did.
What was he even doing out there at third?
He said that Allen was out recruiting.
Ah, so you had to fill in. It's always when you're somewhere you're not supposed to be, right? Exactly.
And he said he doesn't really enjoy being out there. That is a different view, but he likes to do it a couple times a year, I guess, but he'd rather be in the dugout. So that
Well,
was nice.
Derek would go on his trips as well. And it would force him out there sometimes. I think coach likes to be out there when he can sit on a folding chair, when it's like fall ball and stuff. I think coach needs the folding chair out there to feel more comfortable.
Well, I'm sure he wasn't real thrilled to be outside of the heated dugout on
Oh yeah,
a
that's not the
cold
reason.
day.
I heard it was bad, huh? It was rough. I know you got a lot of rain. I heard you got a lot of rain, but then the games they played, it was real cold, huh?
For sure. Carl was outside too.
Ooh.
Yeah.
All right. So to wrap up the red belts, Carl, we'll go back to you. Update us on the Big Ten and the Big Ten pick'em.
Yes. So the Big Ten standings. Let's actually take a look at last week's pick'em. So last week we had Nebraska got on the winning side against Rutgers. Penn State beat Minnesota. Iowa is just still rolling, and they took a series against Nebraska. Illinois basically demolished Maryland. Washington beat Purdue. I'm sorry, not much of a shocker. USC is still rolling, beat Ohio State, and Oregon took the series against Michigan. So. Was and it wasn't horribly competitive. In fact, not a single Big Ten series had a rubber match last week. All eight, the winning team won the first two games. There were a few teams where there were a few cases where the team won the third game, but yeah, there was no rubber matches whatsoever, which was weird because a few weeks ago it was like every series went to a
All
rubber
rubber.
match. So it's things are all over the board. You know, the big thing, and I think we mentioned this last week, but it got called out on D1's Big Ten podcast was also just the fact that although it's gotten a little bit better recently, the Western teams are just curb stomping the legacy Big Ten teams, and to the point that they made, yeah, it kind of stings right now. It would be we were kind of hoping the legacy teams would stand up. I don't feel bad from Indiana's perspective because I didn't by no means felt that Indiana seemed in any way, shape, or form overmatched by UCLA or USC. In fact, I kind of think Indiana probably should have won one of those series. So,
I mean, how could you not? We were up by 10 runs in game three of USC.
yeah.
I think we should have won both series.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'll say it. I think we should have won both after we snuck out that Friday.
Yeah.
I mean, so they might be curb stomping the other guys. This West Coast teams haven't been curb stomping us.
No.
We've been handing games away, but maybe that's over now. Maybe the trip to Assembly Hall, you know, whatever it is, the change here, We've been giving games away. Let's not forget it. But they did not dominate us, and we handed them games.
Yeah.
And maybe that's over now. And now we just play calm and relaxed, and we're nothing to lose. And maybe that's what we need.
Well, among our own group, the Pick'em standings now have a sole leader. Zach is in the lead now at 23-9. He has been picking great. He was 6-1 last week. Josh is a series behind at 22-10. He was 5-2 last week. Chris was also 5-2, picking all home teams last week. Home teams did very well. He is 21-13. I have passed Cass. Yeah. As I was 7-0 last week.
Woo!
And for the first time this season, I am above water. I am at 18-14. I really, really needed this week to look decent. And Cass is now a series behind me. Yeah. Cass went 4-3 this past week. And she's at 17-15. So we're at least all clearly over 500 now.
Yeah.
For the coming week, we've got USC at Penn State, Minnesota at Ohio State, Rutgers at Purdue, Oregon at Maryland, Northwestern at Michigan State, Nebraska at Iowa, and Washington at UCLA. I think we've actually got some really interesting series this week. See, more so than I think last week. So we'll be curious to hear these. I'm going to go ahead, since I've got them handy here, I'm going to go ahead and announce Josh's picks. Josh is picking USC, Rutgers, Oregon, Northwestern as all road teams, and then Ohio State, Iowa, and UCLA. He's got them winning at home. I guess since I did 7-0, I'll go ahead and go next. I'm going to go with USC on the road at Penn State. This was a tough one. I'm going to take Ohio State in that home series against Minnesota. I can't believe I'm doing this. I'm going to pick Purdue. I think the toughest one of them all, because I don't really trust either one of these teams. Uh-huh. But someone's got to win the series, so I'll say Purdue. Yeah, I'll say Purdue. Okay, this one's not tough. Oregon over Maryland. I don't know. Wow, Maryland has just been awful lately. I'm going to go out on a limb here, maybe a little. Although a lot of you have gained points on me by doing it, I'm going to pick Northwestern at Michigan State. I'm also going to say that this is where the Iowa train finally jumps the tracks, and Nebraska, I think, is going to go to Iowa and beat them. And then, I'm not picking against UCLA, even against another West Coast team. So those are my picks. I guess I should pick somebody. Yes. Cass, why don't you jump in?
Okay. Well, I'm also going, I'm going West Coast where available, USC, Oregon, and then I'm going to stick with UCLA in the West Coast matchup. I'm going to go Minnesota at Ohio State. I don't trust either of them particularly, but Minnesota has had more consistent fluky wins or close games. So I'm going to go with Minnesota. I'm also going to pick Purdue as the home team. Again, don't trust either one of them, but one of them's got to win. So Purdue there. I am also going Northwestern over Michigan State. I think there's a chance that Michigan State could come out angry after this last weekend. But I think, at least based on games against IU, I think Northwestern was the better team. While I want Iowa to lose, I don't think they will. I think Iowa's going to win that one. So it's USC, Minnesota, Purdue, Oregon, Northwestern, Iowa, UCLA.
All right. Now we'll turn to the leader so far. Zach, what do you got?
So with the conclusion of March Madness and it being the most chalky tournament ever, what people are calling it, I'm going to stick with that chalk with the pick'em this week. So the team that is higher on the standings on our IUBase.com website with the tiebreakers and everything, so that is USC over Penn State, Ohio State over Minnesota, even though they're both tied at 2-10 in the conference, Rutgers over Purdue, Oregon over Maryland, Northwestern over Michigan State, Iowa over Nebraska, and then UCLA takes it against Washington. Chris, I guess you're the last one to go.
Yep. All right. So last week I took all the home teams because I was going home. And then the Mets got the sweep. They won 5-0 opening day, 3-2 comeback win. 2-1, a nice easy one on Sunday. You know, you go home, you're feeling good with the sweep. Then you get to Monday, the Hoosiers finished their sweep. It was sweeps everywhere. It was beautiful. So for this one here, I can't say now I'm home here and take all the home teams again. I considered it. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to go with USC, Ohio State. I'm glad Carl took Purdue because I had Rutgers. I got Oregon, Michigan State. I feel like just because of their Friday guy, like we got to him, and that's impressive. And I'm so glad we did. That was the one I was worried about, was getting to their Friday guy. But I feel like they'll win one. He's going to win. And then Michigan State just has to win one more out of the next two. I think they will. I have Nebraska. That's a homer pick as far as us, honestly, because we need Iowa to lose some ball games, man, if we want to win this conference. And then I got UCLA to also win their series. So those are my picks. And you know, we've got some work to do on the road ourselves. I know I'm glad Carl's going to be there, and maybe that'll help us out. And you know, as we go on a little road trip in ourselves, I know we're all would have just picked us anyway. So we'll go for another sweep, Carl. What do you think?
Well, Illinois is not exactly going to be an easy test for the Hoosiers. I've been trying to kind of dig through some of the things statistically to get an idea of what's the vibe from this team. In the standings, they are essentially tied with IU. IU's at six, they're at eight. IU is 600, Illinois is 583. They've played one less series and they've already had their bye week. So that's kind of why there's a discrepancy there. So, the winner of this series is going to come out on top in the standings between the two teams after this weekend. And there's just not a lot to distinguish there. Looking at the team statistically, not a lot of guys really stand out. What I see from Illinois is basically they're a relatively deep team. Among the hitters, just about everybody hits decently well. But there's also no real massive standout. They've got two guys with OPS over 1,000, Jack Zabig and Collin Jennings, although Jennings hasn't had as many nearly as many plate appearances. From the pitching perspective, they really do have a pretty solid three-man rotation. The one guy who's struggled a little bit has been Reagan Hall, but he has just come off a really great start. I think it was 6.1 innings, no runs against Maryland, and he's a lefty. So I assume he's their Sunday guy, and their ace, Ben Plumlee. Again, these are all pretty typical numbers. They're in that 5-7 range in ERA, so nothing to knock your socks off. The one guy would be the guy I assume is their closer based on his numbers. Two saves, 2.13 ERA in 11 appearances, Zach Bates. So, I mean, you got to figure this is pretty much a Dan Hartlib team. It's going to be fundamentally sound. They're going to play well up the middle. They're going to hit, they're going to throw strikes. Pretty much all the guys are pretty solid in that, except for the Saturday starter. I think he's a Saturday starter, Tyler Schmidt. He is the one guy who is walking more than he's striking out, but the rest of them pretty much have that under control. So, wish I could say something exciting, but this is a pretty, just a, a typically, strong, which is kind of why we were talking about this. They kind of came out of nowhere to win the Big Ten last year. They just have a lot of good, smart ball players who, when they put it all together, can win baseball games. So,
I think you mentioned the coach, and I think his structure and his foundation. I mean, we've been watching Illinois play for how many years, right? And it's like you mentioned, up the middle, solid, a lot of good pitchers. I mean, every once in a while, they'd have like an ace, right? They had that ace that went up against Kyle Hart that one year, and then the year they went to the Supers. But it's always proficiency, no errors, base running is good. So it's probably more the structure and the system, and they know the players to pick up and who to get. So I think just by mentioning their coach's name is explaining it.
So that's really all I've got at this point. As I said, I will be out there. The schedule as of now is 7 p.m. Eastern on Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, and 2 p.m. Eastern on Sunday. Pretty sure I don't think any of I think these are all Big Ten Plus, I'm pretty sure. So let me verify that. Yes, these are all Big Ten Plus. So no TV broadcasts. Unfortunately, the one weekend Big Ten game did not happen because of a Big Ten Network game, because in the past, because of a schedule thing. Although the Louisville game did get on Big Ten Network.
I think Big Ten Network, I think they might have showed the essentially re-aired it during the time slot because of when I went to my DVR, there was a game there. So I think they might have
Replayed
shown
the
a
big
re-
the plus broadcast. Okay, that's cool to see. I don't, because I've not heard of them doing that before.
No,
So,
I hadn't either.
well, and the point is, the I mean, Cass, you can speak to this more than I can, because obviously I don't watch as many of them, but everything I'm hearing and the ones I've seen for road games, it just seems that the quality is dramatically better this season.
And I will say I can't comment too much on the commentary side of it because I tend to, whether it's home or away, I do tend to mute the TV audio to listen to either early in the season it was Ben Haller, now Austin Render, but the video quality has improved drastically, even from just a few years ago. No more really of the single static camera and that it has improved drastically. Multiple camera angles. There's some, as you would expect, some of the cameras that are perched a little higher, and some of these days have been real windy. At this level, there's no getting around that. But definitely big template there. It might be kind of a bigger price tag, but that bigger price tag has come with a pretty vast improvement.
All right. Well, now the Hoosiers have a, after just 3 days, a 4-game winning streak going. And we talk a lot about, you don't try to get too down when things look bad, as they really, really felt not that long ago. After just 2 games, they felt really bad. And then probably in the same vein, probably shouldn't be feeling too high over that, this 4-game period, especially that sweep of Michigan State. But I will let the rest of the group opine on that. So, I guess we'll start with Cass. What are your thoughts right now on the team and where they're headed?
Well, so my first thought is 4 games in 3 days that are largely not the typical weekend is not great for data entry. And so I am currently kind of all vibes, no data, which is unusual for me. It's not a place I tend to be comfortable. I will say the one kind of data point, kind of going back on with Tyler Cerny and taking over the HBP record. I do find it very interesting that on his career, Tyler Cerny has been plunked exactly as many times as he has drawn walks. You just don't see that often, and so I wanted to highlight that as my lone real data point of the podcast. But like you said, it can be hard sometimes to not get too down when things aren't going well, and also to not get too high when things are going well. I think it was a great sign that all facets of the we saw the peak of what this team is, what they can do when the bats are working, the pitching's working, and the defense is working. And if they can keep it up moving forward for the rest of the season, it's a with that exception of Iowa, it's a fairly friendly schedule. If they can play at this level for the rest of the season,
Yeah.
they'll be at least competitive.
Yeah, and what's nice is it's also a friend, weirdly enough, it's also a friendly RPI schedule to the strength of schedule, because even though a team like Purdue hasn't been playing very well in Big Ten play, they've won a lot of games, and that's what really matters when it comes to the strength of schedule portion of the RPI. So the I again, I'm taking early looks at. It's looking pretty good from an at-large perspective. The only exception being is that lack of a marquee series win. They're doing it more like they did in 23, which, and if they keep going at the pace you're talking about, Cass, they're going to be fantastic. But they're going to have to win a lot of games. They're not going to get into this tournament by winning just around 30 like they did last year, because last year they had Dallas Baptist and Coastal Carolina on the resume. This year they're gonna need Iowa's really maybe the last real shot. It's possible Michigan will be. We just don't know. It's gonna take another month to determine how solid is the Michigan series gonna look. And then they still have a their non-conference week, which is nice that from an RPI perspective, it's on the road at a good Abilene Christian program. So, Zach, what do you have for us?
I was thinking really a week and a half ago when the last time we were on here, I mentioned something about, well, after the USC series loss, that they can hit really with anybody. And you look now, I think we're deep enough into the season that you can look at statistics. So I pulled up kind of the Big Ten stats, and Indiana had, before yesterday's midweek game, Ethan Hedges now sandwiched his way in there. But Corbin Dickerson, Jake Hanley, and Devin Taylor were they're in the top three for hits in the Big Ten. Indiana's hit a decent amount of home runs. They're up there as a team. Like, the strikeout rate is lower than other teams. Like, I think they look good. And from a pitching perspective, which was really the worry from last week, they kind of have figured it out now, with Ben Grable being the lone starter. Cole Gilley, Ryan Kraft, the two of them have really come into fruition, it seems. Jacob Vogel's now back. We saw him against Michigan State. He pitched, I think that was the first game of the series. He pitched a good amount of pitches there. But anyway, I really think that they're in a good spot now, and they're playing teams that they're simply better than. The talent level, Indiana could win every series from here on out. So I think they have a good shot. And with the West Coast teams kind of dominating the Big Ten, Indiana is that team outside, really outside of Iowa as of right now. If they can win that series, they are the best team from the legacy part of the Big Ten.
Chris, any thoughts you want to add?
Well, I mean, for me, walking out of that Louisville game couldn't have felt any worse. I mean, I didn't experience this, this doubleheader run rule, this, that, the third, the sweep. Believe me, I followed along as best I could while out in New York. But I mean, there's a quote, I work in recovery. I work with guys that, trying to better themselves, whether it's substance abuse and mental health. And there's a quote that I like to use a lot, is it's always darkest right before the dawn. And maybe that was it. Maybe the horror story of that third game against USC and then having that two-run lead and what would have been a huge resume win against Louisville, have that fall apart. And then, boom, we get this. Like, I'm going to disagree with Mercer. I heard him say it like this was some of the maybe the best day that he's been around. I think he might have forgot a certain night in Kentucky on his, you know, with Cerruto. I'll have to disagree. We'll agree to disagree, coach. That day was better. But, you know, I heard what he's saying, though, right? Everybody's hitting the pitch and everything's going well. And maybe that was it. Maybe we hit rock bottom that night against Louisville walking out of there. You know, and no offense to Devin or to Jake, you know, but when it just didn't happen with them up at the plate, right? When they walked Dickerson, if I remember, to get to Hanley, I believe that's how it went down, and he just didn't get it done. And it's just it happens, right? The reason why it even got to that was because we had a 2-run lead in the eighth and couldn't wrap it up, and a 10-run lead in the third the day before in the game before and didn't wrap it up. So if that was the darkest and the dawn is here, I'll take it. You know, I, as a Met fan, as being in New York just so recently, this is what I've been doing my whole life. Wait, how many games are we back? Three and a half. We got 2 weeks to go. We're 3 games back of first in the conference right now. At least, unless my man has messed up with the time change. Well, there isn't even a time change. For the way I look at this conference, we are 3 baseball games back,
Yep.
and that's it. Game on. Let's
Also,
go.
looking back to the players' perspective, I really think they've solidified spots. I think, especially the catching position. Coach Mercer was talking about how well they've been doing the last few times, and he's challenged them to throw runners out and to be better blocking behind the plate. That was so TJ Skyler has really stepped up this year, like you can't even imagine. He split that role with Jake Stadler still a decent amount. They split yesterday's midweek game as well, just 4 innings and 5 innings each. Third base Will Moore has taken over. He's been pretty good defensively outside of the first inning yesterday. He hasn't really made any mistakes. Malamazian and Cerny, with Cooper Malamazian, the shortstop. Cerny moved over to second. That's pretty much solid. Hanley's been at first the whole time. Obviously, Taylor and Dickerson are going to stay out there. And then right field is kind of a hole as of right now with Wiggins out. They went to Caleb Koski. Obviously, have to bring that up. He had a grand slam for his first.
Oh, yeah.
And then had a 2 RBI single, I believe it was, in the next at bat. So he had 6 RBIs in the game against Michigan State and then earned the start against Ball State in Tuesday's midweek as well. So really, and Hogan Denny got some run in right field as well. So hopefully Wiggins can come back sooner than later. But they have guys that are hungry and that they want to earn a spot out there. So I really think that they have solidified these positions and they're kind of rolling now with the momentum.
And for you guys who were in the building, how was the infield defense for the series?
I mean, it wasn't elite, but it was solid. I'll
Excellent.
say one thing that does seem to be different, which is they were not pressing like they were in those two games. They
Oh, yeah.
weren't trying to. They're like, you know what? We'll just they there were a lot of balls that were put in pockets. So it's like, yeah, let's not make this throw. Let's not tempt fate here. Let's just hold on to the ball, get the easy out. Hanley had a ball hit right to him. In a double play situation, first thing he did was step on first base. He got
See,
the out.
hey, listen, but it's like, you know, your instinct. I understand why it's happening. I understand why they're trying to make too much, right? Oh, we have to do this play, right? But you know what? It's like the guy every time in the 10th inning wants to try to hit a home run because he could walk it off and they all pop up. We had 3 head-high line drives and you win a ball game.
Well,
So I'm glad the team was better.
and I was so glad to see Zach choosing Devin Taylor. Devin Taylor is only hitting the ball on the ground right now. He's doing all
Right through the
this,
shift.
and he's basically hitting the ball down every time. But he's hitting it so hard, he's hitting it through the shift, and he's getting on base constantly. And when you've got Corbin Dickerson and Jake Hanley behind you,
Right
it
behind.
leads to good things.
Hey, that's why he's getting green lights.
Yeah.
That was great.
And I also wanted to bring up I'll give a shout out to Austin Render on his trivia stuff, which I guess is really also a shout out to Jared Rigdon as well. But the team has had this 4-game streak while starting five freshmen, five true freshmen. The last time that happened was in April of 2012. And you can name two of those freshmen right off the bat. That Schwarber and Travis years. It was Schwarber, Travis, Chris Soyka, Chad Clark, and then I can't remember his first name, but McHenry was the starting pitcher slash DH. And so that's good company to be in when you're the first ones to do something since Schwarber and Travis. That's a good thing, and they played well. Like you said, they weren't pressing. They were both offensively and defensively. They were taking what was there.
Yeah, and part of that is just the confidence that, you know what? We don't need this double play. Our pitchers will get the next, they'll either be a strikeout or a pop-up, they'll get this next out. We'll won't let this guy score. But the one thing we're not going to do is throw the ball into center field and let him score
Well, the worst
right
thing you
then.
can. That like reminds me of another quote from a man I obviously do not like and has ruined many football seasons for me, Bill Belichick, is just do your job, right? Because I think there's times where when you're struggling, the pitchers are like, well, there's going to be errors behind me, so I have to make the perfect pitch. And then, well, the pitcher's not going great, so I have to make the extra play. And, well, I have to hit a three-run home run right now because this lead won't last. And it's like, maybe that, I mean, coach, from my understanding, this did team bonding. Basketball, maybe that's what they needed, man. Maybe they just needed to just be like, listen, we're all one team.
And
Maybe
I'll
just.
say this, the team was a lot more vocal this weekend. There was a lot more chatter coming from the dugout. I think that was something I noticed. It just sounded like they were a lot more into it. And they kind of had to be because the as much as the attendance was decent, but everyone was frozen, so they weren't really there wasn't a lot
Which is
of clapping
fair.
and stomping going on.
Hey, 3 games back with however many to play, I'll take it. I remember running the same nonsense at you guys in 2019 when we were like 6 games back with this many to play, but it played out right. So you never know. Why anyone would give up, I don't know at this point. Sure, did I feel like it? And walking out of Louisville, they were just gonna be like, okay, this will be about certain milestones and certain parts of the season. And watching guys develop and seeing if Malamazen can get to 20 doubles, right? Was he got like 15 now? Some crazy for a freshman. But now it's like, you know what? We just won 4 in a row. Let's get back on and let's go. There's a bigger picture now. And now we're not playing world beaters this weekend.
No.
Let's win another three.
But to the point that you made last year, beating Illinois is not going to be easy, and they're going to have to maintain the processes that have that made them successful, and they're going to have to prove that on the field. Let's turn it over to Chris to give us some updates on our pro Hoosiers.
Well, it was a big week for our new class. The ones that just hit minor leagues, right? The ones that we were just watching last year, whether it was at the BART or on a road trip at the regionals. The 24 class in low A, Connor Foley is actually starting tonight for his team. The Vizela, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I'm not sure. Carter Matheson, he's already got his first professional home run for Clearwater, a 366-foot bomb. Braden Reisdorf out in Myrtle Beach. They brought him in as the closer, and he's already got a K and a perfect inning with a save. Luke Sinard, he came in for his debut. He only faced two batters, but he threw a lot of pitches, and it wasn't that he was on a very strict pitch count. It was just about getting him out there. And of course, nobody wants to, put anybody in a position to get hurt. So, and then of course, Brock Tibbetts, he's already played 2 games. He's 3 for his last 8 with 4 RBIs. So it's great to see guys who've so recently seen in the uniform. Get out there now and start playing, not these spring training games or in the backfields. Like, this is what they're doing now. This is their craft. And as they hopefully they move up pretty quick. I would always hope that college guys moves up pretty fast, through different parts of A and Advanced A. Gabe Bierman's in Advanced A. He threw a relief appearance of 2 innings and he's got 2 strikeouts. And McCade Brown is also scheduled to start tonight in Spokane. As you get to double A, we only have two players in double A. Cade Bunnell, he's played 1 game. He's 2 for 4 with a steal. And Philip Glasser, I don't know how he's still in double A. He's Harrisburg, one game, 1-for-4. Promote Glasser. Glasser and Gorski need to be in the major leagues. We're talking about the Nationals and the Pirates. Can you please move these young men up? We have a possible Yoho Lloyd matchup coming in AAA. You never know who's going to face who. But Memphis and Nashville could be Yoho versus Lloyd. Lloyd's hitting 375. His team was caught in a couple of rainouts. They had some bad weather. But if you go back a while, he's 5 for his last 10. So that's good stuff for him. Craig, 2 appearances, 3 innings pitched with 2 strikeouts. And Grant Richardson, his first AAA home run. And it's ironic, he was playing against the Syracuse Mets. It was on, the game was on, but he had already hit the home run. I was only able to see his last at bat. They had it on like a off TV. But good to see Grant. He looks a lot older, by the way. If you see Grant on TV now, he's got the scruffy beard. And then I took a picture off my phone and showed it to my buddies. Like, look at him now. Look how he was then. They barely recognizable. Such a baby face in college. And then, we got Schwarber and Herron in the pros. Let's see. Schwarber was a double short at a cycle. He's hit 3 home runs in his last 7 games. He's on fire. Schwarber just keeps moving up the ranks. He just passed Bobby Abreu on the all-time Philly list with 389 home runs. Tim Herring's got a win, 2 innings pitched with 3 strikeouts. In his last 17 appearances, going back to last year, 300 runs. So we might not have as many Hoosiers up in pro in the major leagues that we want, but they're everywhere, as you just heard. So we'll just watch them keep moving up. Of course, Kyle Hart is with the Padres. We'll look forward to his next start. He had a rough one this one, but the Padres came back and made sure he didn't get an L on his record, which was cool. But it's just fun to follow along. Especially, I just was there. You're watching the pros play. The backup catcher for the Mets, who played this weekend, went to Miami of Ohio. He played at the Bart in 2016. Okay, he's 28 years old, and he made his debut this year. So that just shows you that anything is possible as long as you keep fighting your dream. A lot of guys, they put it aside. I get that. But for anyone who's still trying, especially a Hoosier alum, we're always going to follow and see, where it takes you, because it's just watching these guys succeed. It's like part of it, right? It's not just about winning the Big Ten Conference, right? It's the whole thing, whether it's incoming high school players or alumni moving on to chase their dreams to play pro ball.
Excellent. Well, thanks very much for that update, and of course to the multiple sources that we have that track this information, which is amazing.
Yeah, you can't go without mentioning David Welch and Pro Bowl Hoosiers as far as the 2 Twitter accounts. Really, you see us retweeting them all the time on X. If you're not following them and you're really into Hoosier baseball, you're not doing it right, honestly. Between the videos and the stuff they send out and the info they get, I literally text my text chat with them. Hey, doing the pod. They don't want to do it themselves. I'm literally reading stuff from them because they're just real helpful to get information out. And we're just lucky to be the conduit for that.
Excellent. All right. Well, that will wrap this up for this week. Thank you for listening to this episode of Talking Hoosier Baseball. For more on Indiana University baseball, hit up iubase.com. For Cassidy Palmer, Chris Feeney, and Zach Horwitz, I'm Carl James. See you at the BART.